One of the things we talk about a lot at Plugged In is story. We look at the stories our popular culture is telling, and then we try to help families think about how the good and the bad in those stories might be impacting our story. And of course, we always want to connect it with God's bigger narrative as well. And when it comes to storytelling, one of the biggest in Christian fiction is author Karen Kingsbury. And now, for the first time, one of her stories is getting a theatrical movie release. Hey everyone, Adam Holtz here, your host of The Plugged In Show, focused on the family's weekly conversation about entertainment, pop culture, and technology. Thanks for joining us today. Well, if you are a Karen Kingsbury fan, you are in for a treat today. I'll be talking with her not only about the new movie based on her book, Someone Like You, but also her new show on Amazon Prime Video. It's called The Baxters. And again, if you're a fan, you know all about The Baxters. I think it's safe to say Karen Kingsbury is having a pretty good week. We'll talk about how she thinks families can encourage a love for reading and a love for writing, and where her own passion for storytelling came from. In our second segment, Bob Hoos and Kristen Smith join me to continue our ongoing conversation about the themes in our team's new book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. Today, we're going to be talking about the basics of boundaries when it comes to technology and entertainment. It might be a little bit longer second segment than we normally do, so make sure you've got your popcorn and your favorite drink ready. And speaking of our new book, if you would like a copy of your very own, we would love to give you one. So today, for a gift of any amount to Focus on the Family, we will send you a copy of Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. We think it can be a terrific, encouraging, and equipping resource for your family. And just like we have multiple voices from our team on the show each week, you'll find chapters written by everyone on our team in the book. So if you're interested in checking it out, you'll find information on how to give and how to receive your copy of Becoming a Screen Savvy Family in the episode notes for today's show. Well, with no further ado, let's get to know author Karen Kingsbury a bit better. Well, friends, today I have the privilege of talking with the best-selling author Karen Kingsbury. Karen, thanks so much for joining us on the Plugged In Show today.
Oh, it's my honor. I love Plugged In.
Well, I want to talk more about that later. Thank you. I'm sure that many of our listeners are familiar with your books, and that's because there are a lot of them and a lot of fans reading them. So I actually downloaded your book list from your website, and by my count, you have 98 with your 99th coming soon. But I was an English major, not a math major. In any way you evaluate it, it is a lot of books. And I want to talk a little bit about writing later on. I'm sure your super fans are aware of it, but casual Karen Kingsbury fans may not know that you have a movie coming out in theaters next week and a new series on Amazon Prime Video that debuted today. I want to talk about both of those. And because many of us as parents are constantly confronting the battle of screen time with our kids, I want to talk about raising readers, raising writers, and cultivating creativity just a little bit later in our conversation. Okay, enough with me. Let's start with Someone Like You, this movie adaptation of your book, which I have seen and reviewed, is being released in theaters next week via Fathom Events. So, first things first, what do our listeners need to know about this story, Karen?
Well, Someone Like You is a love story.
Okay.
But it's a beautiful story of redemption and forgiveness. It's about a young architect, Dawson Gage, who is in love with his best friend, London, but it's never been reciprocated. So they're just friends. And there's a tragedy and he loses her. And in the grief, he finds out that she was actually born through IVF.
London was an in vitro baby. We couldn't get pregnant otherwise.
The procedure gave us two embryos.
What about the other?
We gave it to a doctor who works with infertile couples.
Saying London might have a sibling?
Well, he decides his last act of love for his friend is that he would be able to go and find the embryo, brother or sister, and just connect with that person. So he does, and he finds Andy Allen. The problem is she does not know that she was adopted as an embryo, and it rocks her world. Hmm. Well, he has the privilege of showing her everything about her sister that she would never know about, but he also has the privilege of loving her enough and caring about her enough to send her home. Hmm. What he never expected was that he would fall in love.
Right. But we knew that was probably going to happen like the first time we see her on camera, right?
Exactly. That moment. Because, you know, at that point, that's one of my most heartbreaking moments of the movie when he finds her and she looks just like London.
Yeah.
She's a twin.
Right.
But she doesn't know him.
Yeah.
And that's like, oh, yeah.
So as I was watching it, I thought, this is a pretty intricate plot, how you have built this. How did you come up with that story, Karen?
Well, I was at a speaking event several years ago, and this woman came up to me and she had triplets with her. And I said, oh, your kids are so beautiful, you know, and they're about 4 years old. She said, well, yes. Yeah. She said, we really struggled with fertility. So we adopted them as embryos. And she said, so I, you know, they're all embryo adopted. They're full-blooded siblings. And we implanted three and three took.
Wow.
And I had never heard of that. I thought, what? You know, the Lord has given me this, not only a love for writing, but he's also given me a, you know, kind of an ability to be a detective of the emotions that when I come across something like this, like embryo adoption that I'd never heard of, then I start looking into it. And, you know, I found out that there were nearly a million embryos in deep cryopreservation right now awaiting adoption. Is that crazy?
Wow. I had no idea.
And so our family has a One Chance Foundation. And we give grants to people who adopt Christian families. And we give grants internationally and domestically. But now we also give grants for embryo adoptions. And we've given, we've had three or four children born. And, you know, for those families, they, at least one of the families, what I love is that they already had a boy and a girl. But they felt like, you know, it's like the starfish principle that, well, it matters to this one. We can bring that child into the world. So at the embryo adoption thing kind of stayed with me. And then God began to spin a story, and really pretty quickly, he puts it on my heart like a movie. So with someone like you, it was so visual, and I never felt like I was making it up. It was just this complete story. And when I got to the end of it, on the last page, I felt like I heard the Lord say, this is going to be your first movie, which was both exciting and terrifying because I hadn't opened a production studio at that point.
Well, and that leads me to my next question. I mean, I mentioned earlier, you've got, you know, almost 100 books. I just thought, why this one? What made this one the one that you would choose to make into a movie?
Well, that's a great question. And we gave it a lot of thought. But it came down to, my heart was on this one because of the cinematography. You know, there would be lake and jet skiing and a glass house that we had already, I'd already found that location. And I knew that I wanted to film something there at some point. So it was kind of, and then the high concept, like there's not ever been a movie about embryo adoption.
Yeah. So I didn't even know it was a thing. I mean, like you were saying, this is not something I was familiar with.
Yeah. And then I knew if I could get very talented actors, we would be, because it has to be different, right? I mean, I have had books that were made into Hallmark movies or different things, and those have been great. But, and I'm thankful for them, but they're, it's not as deep and it doesn't have that sort of high concept like this. This one belongs on the big screen.
Yeah. And this will be a Fathom Events release. Is that correct?
Yes, Fathom. Fathom's done some really interesting changes lately. They used to do Fathom events. They were just one or two, sometimes 3 day plays on the big screen. But now they've kind of split their way of what they want to do. And this is like a Fathom film. So it's the same company, but they just decided, you know what, we want to do some actual full movie theatrical releases. So we get to open in theaters nationwide and in Canada on April 2nd, and we get a guaranteed 10 days, which is more than, you know, some studios don't even get that.
That leads me to my next question. Why is it important for people to go, if they're interested in this movie, to see it early as opposed to waiting, you know, till the end of the run?
Yeah, that getting tickets early is everything for someone like me. So my husband and I, we used our savings. Like we actually dipped into all of our retirement money. We just like said, we felt God was calling us to do this. But now, honestly, because we're not a studio, we have no investors, we're on our own. So the way you stay in theaters, the way that you build your footprint in the theatrical community, early ticket sales. So getting out there and seeing it, telling your friends, that will let us have that opportunity to stay in longer.
Okay. Well, let's pivot a little bit and talk about The Baxters. It is on Amazon Prime Video starting today, and they're some pretty big names involved with that. One of them, I think, is Roma Downey Jr. Tell me how this project came to be.
Yeah, you know, this is fun. I wrote The Baxters about 25 years ago when I was just in my, I was in my late 20s, I think early 30s when I started writing The Baxters. And, you know, I wrote the first one and I showed it to my dad. My dad loved it. He said, oh, Karen, this is amazing. Like, it's a doctor and his wife and their five adult kids and the journey of each of them making kind of, you know, decisions toward adulthood, whether it would be, a, you know, putting them into a trial or a terrifying situation or a triumph. I mean, they were really, you know, all on the stage of becoming and finding love and building their faith in Christ. So all of that was happening. And my dad read that first book and he said, Karen, this has got to be a TV show. He said, you know who you need to contact is that Roma Downey woman, because she, you know, she was in touch by an angel. She would love this.
Yeah.
I laughed at a time and I said, Dad, I don't have her number. So I don't know if you would have a way to call her. And so we kind of both laughed about it. Well, 15 years later, and my dad had already gone home to heaven, I get a call from Roma Downey. And there's her beautiful Irish accent. And she says, Karen, I've read the Baxter books and I love them. And I wonder if you would give me your blessing to make them into a TV show.
Wow.
That was the beginning. I could just see my dad smiling.
So it turns out you didn't need her number. She found you.
Is that like only God could do that? It's amazing. And so it took a long time. We, for a few years, we were working on, you know, scripts and just different things. And she would let me edit the scripts, which I so appreciated. And, you know, then we got to the place of filming. That was like 17 and 18, 2017, 2018, 2019. We filmed three seasons and I would go down and visit the set. And so, you know, it sat on a shelf for many years. It's partly why I wanted to make my own movie was because I had no control over getting that on the air.
Okay.
But the whole time, though, the prayer was that it would be on something as big as Amazon's Prime Video. Mm-hmm. And big enough that, you know, even the whole world could see it. So it was earlier this year, after we already had our theatrical release date set for Someone Like You, then I got another call from Roma and she was half crying, you know, half laughing. She said, oh, Karen, our prayers have been answered. It's going to be on Amazon's Prime Video in all the countries, like 240 nations around the world. And 350 million people will have their chance to watch The Baxters. So yeah, it's a total dream come true. And, you know, they're announcing that they're releasing one season's worth. But I think by now there may be some secrets out that we get to have access to all three seasons.
Okay.
And then, you know, if that goes well, I'm sure we'll be right back at it filming more.
That's awesome. Well, it's an amazing story just to hear the process. And I think process is a good word to kind of segue to the next thing I want to talk about. You're a writer. People may not think of me as a writer because they hear me talking, but I spend most of my time writing and editing. And when I thought about you writing all those books, it just raises a zillion questions for me because it's no small thing to write a book. And I think what I want to ask is, after writing that many books, I would love to hear, and if we have aspiring writers in our listening audience, I know they'll love to hear this too, what your writing schedule looks like week in and week out, because you don't accidentally, you might accidentally write one book, but you don't accidentally write 100.
Goodness. I mean, you know, some of those books are kids' books, to be
sure. Sure. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of stat inflation, but not too much.
Yeah, not too much. It's got to be 65, 70 novels. And if we go back to, you know, when our kids were little kids before we had adopted, we doubled our family in 2001 through adoption. But we had three little kids and I was writing these novels and I was writing about two books a year.
Okay.
See, I had this training in journalism and I think that made a big difference in just sort of teaching me how to write quickly and see it, you know, succinctly. So I would outline a book and spend time getting to know those characters and really I had to love my outline. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I could write a novel in 2 weeks pretty easily. Like, wow. So that, I think that's the explanation piece. It's like, well, then I was on vacation most of the year, right?
Right. So I mentioned earlier, obviously as parents, we're trying to navigate this world, right? Where our kids are potentially inundated with screens. They don't have to be, but oftentimes that is the case. What would you say about raising readers? And if you have a child who shows some aptitude or interest in writing, how do we encourage that gift these days?
It's so important. You know, I think, and you probably may have noticed, but five of my books are the Baxter family children. So this is an origin series where we take these young adults you're going to see and find out about in the Baxters. And this is them when they were little, when they didn't, no cell phones, no internet. And, you know, they have great imaginations and a lot of love in their family and faith, and they have laughter. And it just, I tell you, when I get letters from kids saying that they can't put these books down and they're telling everyone and they're just handwritten, you know, first graders, second graders, that's like one of the highlights of my career, because it is the young people today that desperately need it. And truly, my prayer honestly is that the Baxter family children books just will take off and that the series will drive that. But, you know, it's you want to encourage reading with kids. And sometimes that's going to look like you sitting down with them and taking turns reading.
Okay.
Find a way to be able to make it a memory that they're going to be like, I don't know what it, you know, they learn to love reading.
Yeah.
But they're learning to love it by the love that you give to the child. There's that. But I would also say, if, you know, you need to foster reading, success for your child's life utterly depends on reading.
Yeah.
So that's going to go everything from their textbooks to the things that will help expand their mind and teach them the kind of person that God wants them to be, to scripture. I mean, it's you need to be a reader if you're going to be successful in life. And then for the writer, you know, do what my dad did. My dad would read what I had written, and it was like, it was the most gripping, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning thing. And I would be 12 or 13 or 15 or whatever, and he would just shake his head and his tears well up in his eyes. And he would say, Karen, one day everyone is going to know your writing.
Wow.
And he would say, you know, Karen, someone has to be the next best-selling author, and I think it's going to be you. Hey, take a page from my dad's playbook. Say those things to your kids, and they're going to be like, where's the paper?
Man, that is solid gold, because I think as kids, we just long for that affirmation, right? And the belief that is there. And I love that story. That's a beautiful story. How old were you when you wrote your first book?
Well, I was 5 when I wrote my first book. My dad had been reading to us. Again, there's the reading connection, but
right.
Had been reading Dr. Seuss to me. And I loved it so much. The rhythm and cadence and rhyme of Dr. Seuss is perfect. And he makes up words where there isn't. If there isn't a word for that rhyme and rhythm, then he'll make one up. So I would memorize them. I had a good memory. So, and I would just pretend to be reading them, but I'd have it memorized, and I loved it. So it's 5 years old. I grabbed some paper. My mom stapled it together. And I wrote a book called The Horse. And it was about a horse who was hungry and came to someone's house for leftovers. I have no idea where it came from. All the words were spelled wrong. Let your kids spell things wrong, first of all. That's okay. They'll figure that out later, but let the creativity flow. And my mom actually saved that book, written in crayon, you know, and she gave it to me for my college graduation. So I had a lot of support.
That's a beautiful story. And then obviously you just kept writing. So you identified that early on, right?
Right. I mean, I kept doing it. Went on from there to, you know, more poetry and short stories through my early teen years. And then I wrote for the newspaper in high school and in college, got my degree in journalism. Then I wrote for the LA Times as a sports writer, of all things. Quickly, they realized she can write better than she knows sports. I was kind of doing the, you know, the feature stories in sports. And then they moved me over to the front page. And I was doing big wrap-up stories for the Sunday feature. And I was doing that when my husband and I realized, you know, we found out we were expecting a baby, going to be starting a family. And we prayed there would be a way to go from plan B to plan A, which was always to be a novelist. And God opened the door for me to write 4 true crime books based on those stories that I had covered for the newspaper. And after 4 of those, I'm telling you, Adam, that was all I could do. It was so dark, and I just didn't want that. So I wrote my first novel without a contract. And after a year of getting some rejections and whatnot, finally, I got a person who bit and wanted more than one. Like, can we sign you to 3 books? And I've been doing the life-changing fiction ever since.
That's amazing. I love that story. And I love just hearing how God has worked through those different chapters and different, can't even talk about writing without talking about chapters. It's just a great story. And I think for anybody out there who is interested in creative endeavors, we've all gotten rejection letters. We've all run into roadblocks and writer's block and all of the cliches. So thank you for sharing that with us and spending some time with us today. I have one last question that's a little bit self-serving. You talked about loving Plugged In, and I would love to hear how you have used Plugged In your family, if you're willing to share that with us.
Absolutely. You know, like I say, we doubled our family in 2001. We adopted three best friends that were about 5-6 years old from Haiti. So we then had 6 kids. We have a daughter and then 5 sons. And, you know, as kids are getting older, and they were all close in age, so they start hitting late middle school and high school years, and it's, oh, can I go see this?
Yeah.
Can I go see that movie? We're all going to go see this. And there was like, I mean, it was a friend of mine that told me about Plugged In. And so it was like, there was no going to see anything unless we looked at Plugged In. I mean, that's just the way it was, because it covers everything to the finest level. Like, it's almost as if I got to see it ahead of time. You know, how many uses of this? How many uses of that language? I so appreciated that. And even I can tell you, okay, you can bring the whole family to the theaters to see Someone Like You opening April 2nd. The Baxters, be careful.
Yeah.
The Baxters is PG-13.
Okay.
And younger kids, I mean, there's more adult things. I mean, there's, you have a stalker, you have infidelity, you know, a college professor having an
affair. So you're giving us the Plugged In preview. I've never had the privilege
of
a creator doing the review first.
You're going to have to, you're going to have to be a little more tricky with that one. And just people need to know that's not for 8 and 10 year olds.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, the love story that we have coming out theaters, that's, you know, that's PG. So it's trusted. And I love that about Plugged In, and it stayed the course of time. Here we are, you know, and our kids are having kids. And now it's still being used by our family. So it's been a mainstay for us.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I feel like we've never talked to each other before, but I feel like I have a new friend. And I look forward to hearing how Someone Like You and the Baxters do in their release. And thanks again for taking time to talk with us today, Karen.
Thank you, Adam. I feel the same way. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Well, I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Karen Kingsbury. And I find myself asking, wow, can you believe that she has written 98 books? That's just so inspiring to me. Well, now we're going to shift gears a bit and talk about the subject of boundaries when it comes to entertainment, technology, and our families. We talk about this subject in a couple different chapters of our book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, and we're going to unpack those just a bit here. And so the word boundary, I think we need to start there. It's kind of a fancy name for limits, right? Or another word that feels harsher to American ears, and that's rules. And honestly, what child loves rules, right? They don't wake up in the morning and say, Mommy, Mommy, I just want more rules today.
Unless they're the firstborn. They might.
And then they might. That's true. That's true. And that's Kristen Smith, who's joining us today. And Bob, you're here as well. So
yes, indeed.
You know, that's a great time to welcome both of you in. But even though we may not naturally like boundaries, frankly, as kids or as adults, it's so important. And let's talk about it with regard to our children. Why do you guys think boundaries are so important for our kids?
Well, I would start by saying everyone needs them. And I think we as adults, we will automatically recognize that we need boundaries in our lives too, you know? But we've had enough life to learn, okay, this is where I need to set boundaries for myself. Why? Because let's face it, as an adult, you can do pretty much anything.
Right.
But if you do all the time anything, then you end up flushing your life down a toilet oftentimes.
You have consequences
exactly.
for poor choices.
Exactly.
Right?
And kids haven't learned that yet, you know? And I think part of our process as adults and parents is to help them learn that process. You know, we often talk about Unplugged In that our role is not to tell people what to go see or what to watch.
Yeah.
Our role is to say, here's the kind of stuff you're going to encounter. Now, here's how you can make the decision for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about discernment. And kids, you know, let's face it, they're not thinking about that sort of thing.
They're not born with that sort of in place,
are
they?
They're, in fact, if anything, they're wanting, like you were suggesting, to push the boundaries, to push the rules, because they want more of that freedom,
right.
You know? But they haven't learned yet that when you have freedom, the responsibility comes with it, you know? Unless, of course,
Spider-Man
Spider-Man fans.
Yeah, there you go.
I like to think of it, something my husband and I tell my kids is, what's our job? What's mommy and daddy's job? They're like, to keep us safe. But we try to emphasize that a lot because it's not just to keep you physically safe so you can't sprint out in the parking lot like my middle child would gladly. But like, I'm going to keep you emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Like, we're going to create these parameters. We're going to give you this fence. And then we can expand it as you get a little bit older, as you understand even what discernment is. I mean, there are adults that don't like boundaries. There are adults that don't like parameters.
Right, yeah.
And so teaching your kids from a young age how to do this well, I think, is really crucial for their well-being.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And let me just say, by way of confession a little bit, and this has more to do with parenting than maybe entertainment and technology, I find that one of the remarkable things about being a parent, and my kids are 13, 15, and 17 now, is I realize how much kid there is still left in me.
Oh, sure.
Like, I think when we're young, we look at our parents and we automatically have them as our vision of what an adult is and looks like and does. But as I get older, I have these moments where I'm like, oh man, I need, like you were saying, Bob, I need to recognize boundaries just as much as I need to help my kids do it. And sometimes, you know, what's one of our favorite quiet parental sayings? Do as I say, not as I do. But they're watching us. And
right.
So boundaries are not just an issue for our kids, but especially when we come to the discussion of screen time and entertainment, if we think that we can have a totally different set of rules for ourselves as parents, our kids are going to notice.
Bingo.
They sniff out hypocrisy better than anybody because they've got a front row seat for it, right?
No, it's true. I mean, I think it's something as simple as like wanting to unwind. And you've talked about this a lot, Adam, feeling entitled to do that at the end of the day because you've had a long day and you're zoning out on your phone or whatever that looks like. Well, your kids are going to realize that.
Right.
And I think making sure that we have those for ourselves. I mean, boundaries is it's a pretty big flashy word right now. Everyone wants a boundary, and mostly for people they don't want to deal with.
Right.
But I think
You're stepping on my boundary.
Yeah,
could you
it's
move
true.
Over there?
Yes. But making sure that we're practicing this ourselves, because I think we have to remind ourselves to reinforce our own boundaries. Why we don't let this into our home. What's the culture of our home? Our kids are going to see that.
Well, and I love that you said, what's the culture of our home, right? Mm-hmm. That to me, that's a terrific question.
Yeah.
Because we often use the word culture to describe the out there, you know, whether that's our local environment, our city, our school, or you know, we talk about pop culture, popular culture, what's happening in the world of entertainment. But the way we create a household, it sets norms and expectations for this is how we live.
And it's too easy for us as parents not to actually think about that.
Yeah. Say more about that, Bob.
We're in the hustle bustle of our life. And so we look at things from a right and wrong, okay? Right and wrong. This is right. This is wrong. Deal with it, you know?
Right.
And we don't think about that bigger picture.
Yeah.
Because we're so busy.
Yeah.
But if we can slow down enough to think about that larger picture, think about what we want ultimately for our family and our kids and ourselves, what's the healthy choice, then that's a wise beginning.
I think so too. And let's build on that in our conversation here. When it comes to technology, especially as we think about screen time, what are some of the broad parameters that we need to have in mind? And here, again, it's not our job to say these should be the exact rules for your family, but what do we need to
we'll
be thinking
give you
about?
The rules. Yeah.
Right.
No. Well, I start out, I'm thinking about video games because that's part of what I do and what I've done for a long time in terms of even my free time, not just reviewing video games, but playing video games.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the rules that I always thought was a great one for my family was to make sure that video games are always out in the open.
Okay.
Now, you can apply that
to... So that has to do with where we're engaging with screens, right?
That you can apply that to screens. You can apply that to your phone. You can apply that to all those things.
That's right. Good.
But it needs to be out in the open where everybody gets to see it.
Yeah.
And there's... I know the mentality is, well, I don't want to deal with video games. Just let Junior take his game into his room and play it. No, don't worry about it. But the problem is that, one, you don't know what Junior's playing.
Right.
You may be thinking, oh, he's playing that football game. No problem. Right. But he may have brought home or downloaded one of those M-rated killers.
Grand Theft Auto or something.
There's blood splashing all over the place and a lot of bad examples.
Right.
And you don't know that if the game is in the bedroom.
Yep.
And the second thing is you don't know how much time they're spending on it. It's really easy. If I'm a kid and I've got a game in my room, now I may be going to bed, turning off the light, and Mom and Dad are going to bed. Okay, now I can still get up and play, and I can play all night long.
Yep.
If it's in my room, and maybe as long as I put something under the door so they don't see the light or whatever. the problem is that there are no parameters, and next thing you know, you've got somebody who is suffering the slings and arrows of having spent up all night long and then trying to go to school the next day.
Yeah, and I think there's another thing, and that is if you're doing online gaming, you can actually hear who they're playing with as well.
Yeah.
You know, and that has to do with something as simple as, you know, if you're on with somebody who has really terrible language, you can say, maybe you need to log off this session and get on with somebody else. Or if you're playing with complete strangers and somebody starts to act a little sketchy, there's that safety
built in. And that's a good reason not to use headphones.
Well, exactly.
You know, and I mean, because that's another one of those things where if they're under their headphones, you don't know what's going
on
in there.
That's a great point, Hoos.
And getting that out in the open where everybody can hear what's going on, that's good.
Yep. So we've talked about a couple of different parameters here. We've talked about where we're engaging with screens, and you've also talked about how long we engage with screens. So maybe we unpack that one a little bit too. So it's where, how much. What do we know about setting limits for how long that we're on screens? Like, what are some of the things that experts have said about that? And is there a starting place for that conversation, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they've said that, like, having that much screen time, an excessive amount, is like an equivalent to a heroin addiction, right? As you're coming off something.
Yeah.
So we're talking
about...
Because
your brain's just getting bombarded with dopamine all the time.
But I think as far as, like, setting time, I'm really strict about this. And I only have... My oldest is six, so I feel really... Like, I don't really have a lot of say here because I'm not a seasoned parent. But as far as our tech time, like, there's a reward system that we have set up.
Yeah.
Like, your behavior determines whether you're going to have tech time. You have to get school stuff done first. We don't do video games at all during the week. It's a weekend thing only.
So you've got not only how much, but when and for what reason. So you've got a bunch of boundaries built in.
Yeah.
Are winning in this conversation.
Anyway, I just want to make sure that my kids know that this is a privilege. I want them to enjoy it. My son loves to play with his dad. And this is something that we just started talking about.
Yeah.
He wants to put the headphones on. He wants to talk to friends. We're like, no headphones right now. My husband is a little more permissive about it. So we're trying to find like a common ground.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that they have these boundaries in place. Because I do think that it's so easy for 3 hours to pass.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, sometimes as a parent, it's so much easier to just be like, play the game. It entertains you.
Right.
Exactly.
I can do my own thing.
Nobody's fighting.
Everyone's happy. It is
because
what it is.
Because they're all digitally lobotomized.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Right? But I need, as a parent, it is my responsibility. Like, my pleasure is not the ultimate goal. It has to be first about my children. I think this is part of sacrifice.
And let me reinforce one thing you said, talking about your husband playing the game with your son.
Yeah.
The fact is that I think a lot of parents think, I don't know if I want to get kids involved in games. But if you start playing games with kids when they're younger, you start establishing this connection point.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you know that what they're interested in, you can help guide them to things that they could be interested in that might be entertaining without being problematic.
Yeah.
And when you start young, you establish that dad and son or mom and daughter or whatever parent-child relationship playing a game, and then it's a lot easier to talk to what they play later on.
Yeah. I mean, my son and my husband talk about Lego Star Wars like 24/7 now. Like, they're so, he's so into it. But also, we've been able to do like family game night. So sometimes that's a board game, and other times it's like Mario Kart or Super Smash Bros. Or something like that, where we're all sitting down and everyone's participating, even if the 4-year-old has no idea what
she's doing.
And it
really comes down to that communication point, that where you're able to talk about things.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, you know, we're talking about boundaries here. Boundaries start, in my opinion, the whole process of getting good boundaries for your kids start by you shutting up and listening to what they have to say.
And they're in the context of a relationship.
Exactly.
They're not just rules that come down from on high, but we're establishing them with the back and forth conversational and relational processes.
So you can start out by asking a question about anything. And I'm not talking about just games. I'm talking about screens, social media, anything. You can ask a question about what they think about this or that, or what they think about, if you've established some sort of rules, what do they think about those rules?
Yep.
And why do they think they're important or not important? And then listen to what they say.
Yeah.
Because if you actually take time to listen to them, two things happen. One, they feel heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And two, they give you something that you can work with. I think we as parents, our tendency is to just step into the room and say, this is what shall be. And
right.
And this
like
is
Charlton Heston coming off the mountain, right?
This is the word of wisdom which you shall follow. But the point
I
is...
I love it when you do that voice, by the way.
But the point is that it's that give and take. It's that listening to what they have to say and saying, okay, all right, I hear you there. But what about this?
Yeah.
I think that's age dependent too, because
it is.
I have littles, and so there's a lot of words from on high that happen in our house.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? As far as boundaries. But even, for example, my son is 6, and we're already starting to have these conversations. Now, I think he's a natural born salesman, so
you
got to be careful.
Well, he's your son.
There's some minor manipulation going on there. But I think as I listen to him, like you were saying, I take the time and really hear what he's saying, he feels hurt. So even if what he's saying is all kinds of crazy, I heard him, and then we can go from there.
Well, and let me just say, by way of aside, I was thinking about this conversation this morning, and I didn't plan it this way. It's a happy accident that we're talking about boundaries from three different seasons of life. You have littles.
Yeah, yeah.
I have 3 teenagers. Bob, your kids are grown. They have kids of their own. So you're talking about it, you know, as somebody who's gone end to end with the process, and now you're watching your grandkids and your children moving through this. And I think that the question of boundaries is not one that is set in stone. It's an organic thing. And they really do change as your kids age into the next season. And sometimes the funny thing about that change, and Kristen, you probably experience this and you'll experience it more, is sometimes you don't even realize you're in a new season until you like realize, oh, wait, this is different than it used to be. And we're now relating differently. And so you make those adjustments as you go.
I think you have to be okay with that too. I mean,
you
know,
exactly.
The funny saying, like, I was a perfect parent before I had kids, right?
And or then, before you had your second kid.
Lord, isn't that the truth? Help me say, Jesus. Yes.
We got it totally right with my first child.
Isn't it so humbling? It's so good to have more than one kid.
I remember we were so good. Our son did not see a TV before he was 2 years old. We were absolutely almost pharisaically religious with the screen stuff.
Yeah.
And then we had more kids and it all sort of got a little looser. Now, I don't say that to say you throw it out the window.
No.
I'm just saying that with more kids, the complexity...
The dynamic changes.
The dynamic changes and the complexity
gets
harder.
And we've got to keep in mind that our team changes. It's much like a football team. You know, think about it. If your team is struggling, you can say, well, wait a minute, the coaches aren't planning the game for the players.
Are you listening, Denver Broncos?
Yeah, they're not gearing it up for the people we have. That's the exact same thing for a family. You have to determine the rules you set, the boundaries you set, the conversations you have based on the players, the people that you have in your family, because they're all so different.
This is a really good conversation, and I think the importance of having this from a relational perspective is My husband and I talk about this a lot. I really want our kids to want to come home when they're older.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I want them to want to be with us, to want to have a relationship right. with us. And so I have no idea if I'm doing this the right way. I just pray that I am.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to the Holy Spirit because, like you're saying, this constantly changes and we have to be in tune with that.
Yeah. And I will say another confession. It's been a confessional discussion today. I would say people might be surprised at how far on the permissive end of the spectrum my wife and I are. But speaking to what you're speaking about, Kristen, we have, especially as our kids have moved into their teen years, we've sought to prioritize relationship. Mm-hmm. And that relationship question shapes the way we yeah. establish those yeah. boundaries. And yeah. relationship is based on respect and trust. And so if you have a boundary violation that involves a massive breakage of trust, there are consequences for that,
sure,
right? Yeah. It's like, now we got to reset things because you did an end around over here. And that reset is not a punitive one, but it is acknowledging the reality of, okay, you've wandered into some territory that we want to protect you from. But there's that give and take. And I think, and I hope, man, I feel like no matter how you parent, you look back and think,
yeah.
oh, I screwed that up. But I think that prioritizing relationship and conversation with regard to entertainment and screens goes a long ways.
Parents also need to, along the same lines of what you're talking about, they need to adjust their mindset a little bit about the difference between authoritarian
yes.
Focus and authoritative.
Yes, and you talk about this in the book, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, yeah.
This is really good.
Authoritarian yeah. is essentially that hard-fisted, slam the table, say no,
yeah.
kind of mentality. And
yeah.
and I understand that. And yep. especially, you were talking yeah. about younger kids.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's where it has to be. That's where
right.
you need to say, here's where the boundaries are, no, okay? But especially as they get older, that doesn't work as well.
Right.
And having the authoritative, which is much like what you were talking about, Adam, where you've got this relationship, you've got this give and take, but at the same time, you can lay out the parameters
yep.
of here's why we have our guidelines, and then talk about why they're important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think as the parent, how we hold boundaries, how we are disciplined, will directly reflect how we parent our children.
Absolutely.
The boundaries that we hold for our kids or don't hold for our kids.
Yep.
So I think a lot of this is really introspective, not from a shame perspective, right?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to do this because of this or because one time I messed up when I was a kid or a teenager and my parents handled it this way. Like, establishing this is how I exist. These are the things that I do. And then that reflects on how we mold, like our kids are molded, right?
Yeah. And sometimes I think the boundary conversations can come down to case by case sort of,
yeah.
you know, what are we going to do in this particular situation?
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons Plugged In exists, is to give you information. And here we're getting into the what, you know, what kind of content are we consuming? I like that our conversation has touched on the different parameters of boundaries. We've talked about, you know, where are we engaging with screens? How long are we engaging with them? With whom are we engaging? And that's
sure.
one that I think that can kind of fall off the radar. But the yeah. relational component here is huge. And then the what question. What are our family standards? What are our values? How do we make one decision? When do we say yes? When do we say no? And as our kids get older, there are going to be shifts in that. I want to give another, my final confession for today. A while back, my almost 17 at that point, year old son came to me and said, "Dad, all of my friends are going to see Cocaine Bear. This is an R-rated movie about a bear
that
eats a bunch of cocaine and acts appropriately, you know?" And I kind of rolled my eyes, right? I'm like, really? Cocaine Bear? For real? And I also rewound the tape a little bit to when I was 16. And I thought, this is a movie custom made for 16-year-old boys. And I looked at Plugged In. I'm like, all right, there's some language and there's a bear doing bad things. This is not my favorite, but okay, you can go. And he said, well, that's good. I already bought the ticket. I'm like, all right, good talk. Fairly
Thanks
shortly,
for checking with me,
sir. Fairly shortly after that, he came to me and said a bunch of his friends were getting together to watch the Christian Bale movie American Psycho. Which, whatever content issues exist, it checks every box like 10 times.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually one of the most brutal movies in every way, and especially in terms of sexual content, that's probably come out in the last 25 years. And I said, you know, bud, a while back, I said yes to this other thing, but I feel like this is out of bounds, that there's so much, especially really twisted sexual content here. I don't want you seeing it, and I don't think anything will come of it, and I don't think it's a great way to go spend time with your friends. And he said, you know what, Dad, I get that. I'm kind of disappointed, but I understand where you're coming from. And so I think you can critique my parenting in those two places, that I'm making an arbitrary distinction between R-rated violence and R-rated sexual content. But as our kids grow up, those are the calls we're making, right?
Yeah.
And really helping them to say, this is going to be really bad. And, you know, my kid's going to college next year. He can go watch Cocaine Bear if he wants to. Like, I want him to have that sense of difference between those two things. So that's just a case study. And I'm sure some of you listening might think, huh, I might have handled that differently. But I think that when we say yes to some things, it also gives us kind of credit in the bank. So when we say no, and so you don't need to let your kid watch Cocaine Bear, but look for places that you can say yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that when you need to say no and enforce those boundaries, it's not just the ogre from the sky saying, thus saith Dad. Right.
And get them to answer questions along the way.
Yeah.
Why do you think this would be the choice or that?
Yep.
I mean, I know a lot of people that are just very close to me, and growing up, it was always no for everything.
Yep.
I mean, Nate Bargatze does like this whole skit on like early 90s Christian parents. It's actually hysterical. But part of that is, it's just the culture that we grew up in, right?
Right.
And it was just a hard no. If it's not on K-Love, no. If it's not whatever, it's an absolute no. When I feel like even growing up, there was probably some room for discussion, but a lot of times my parents just said no, and they weren't willing to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't really
talk
through it. And
so that shuts down relationship, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not rebellious by nature. At least I wasn't when I was younger.
Well, we'll be the judge of that, I think.
But I think I didn't really affect me too negatively, but I can understand how it would for a lot of kids. Like, you have to have that foundation, or at least the ability to have that conversation, is really important. And again, this is based on age.
Right.
I don't necessarily feel the need to do that with my six-year-old.
Right.
But as he gets older, I know I will.
Yep. And let me rewind and say, we didn't let our son see Marvel movies till he was 13.
Right. Because
they were PG-13. And so we held the line on that one, you know, when his friends started seeing Marvel movies when they were 10.
Yeah.
And you got to pick your battles. But I think, especially as our teens get closer to being on their own, they're going to be making all of their own decisions very shortly.
Yeah.
We have an opportunity to practice some of that and to engage in that conversation before they get there.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something as simple as not making everything a forbidden fruit.
Right.
Because I think that there's something to that like, now you're off on your own and I get to do all the things I never got to do before, right? Yes. Or I can really critically think about this because my parents helped me learn how to critically think about it.
Yep.
Bingo.
Well, I think there's more to say. I think we've actually had a terrific conversation about boundaries today. So thanks for bringing that to the table for our listeners today. And of course, we do talk more about these things in Becoming a Screen Savvy Family.
Right.
Thanks, guys. Well, we have a new segment on the show that we introduced a couple weeks ago, and it's just called Plugged In Dad Jokes. And you know, we talk about parenting, and one of the roles of dads is to be funny in their own eyes, if not in their children's, right? And so
you like this, Adam, though.
I do. Yeah. I so many dad jokes.
So many.
So
well, and these are dad jokes that are geared toward what we do in Plugged In. So, you know, our content categories are discernment focus.
That's right. And with that, Bob, I'm going to let you go first because I'm not sure my joke necessarily fits those parameters.
Okay,
but
well,
go ahead.
Well, okay, I'll do a simple one.
Okay.
A real quick simple one. And this one is a content category one. One of our content categories is alcohol and tobacco and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here we go. Why did the sailboat start smoking?
Oh, man. Why did the sailboat start? I don't know, Bob. Why did it?
I don't know.
Peer pressure.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Okay, there you go.
I love that. I'm going to go next.
Okay, let's hear it.
I like this joke. What do you call a fake noodle?
A fake noodle?
I have no idea.
An impasta.
I think you laughing at this is really, it's like the cherry on top.
Yeah. Right?
That's a real dad joke.
It is a real dad joke.
Okay, I'm not a dad, but I'm going to tell a joke. Did you hear that laughing too loudly is illegal in Hawaii?
Why is that, Kristen?
They only permit aloha.
Oh!
But you guys, we've got to gear these toward movies, TV. I'll give you another
movies in Hawaii.
Well, that's true.
Sometimes they eat pasta in movies.
I'll give you another example. Another example. I saw a criminal TV show the other day.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And in this particular episode, it was all about somebody sneaking into people's houses and stealing envelopes and postage stamps. The detective walked in and said, "I suggest that the suspect is male."
Why are you so good at this? I don't have these.
Bob, I think moving forward, we're just going to let you do this.
So. Seriously?
No. These are fun. There's a lot of fun things. And by the way, for those at home, what is it that makes any old regular joke into a dad joke?
When dad no one laughs it? But dad.
Well, close. But I would suggest that it's when it's fully grown.
Wow, Bob.
Ba-dum-bum.
Wow. Man, do other people have dad jokes? I need to hear them.
This is like our 200 and something episode, and I feel like there's missed opportunities. We could
really
have been working
has.
In
we need
all
to just
of,
sort of
the
get
whole
back
way.
Into those. Dad jokes are fun.
Well, we will do this segment occasionally because, frankly, in our crazy world, it's good to laugh, and we will try to keep them plugged in specific. So
I didn't mean to.
I appreciate that.
I wasn't trying to reprimand. So.
No, it's all good.
We are plugged in.
Thanks, guys. And we would also like to thank you for joining our conversation today. As always, we hope that it's been one that has encouraged and challenged you. We had a great conversation about boundaries just now, and I loved having the chance to talk to Karen Kingsbury. And if you have something to say about either one of those things, we would love to hear from you. In fact, if you could ask Karen Kingsbury a question, what would it be? Or if you'd like to give us a tip about how you set up boundaries in your family, we would love to hear about that too. And here's how you can let us know what you think. If you go to thepluggedinshow.com, you can leave us a voicemail and maybe we'll use that segment on a future show. Or just reach out to us at team@thepluggedinshow.com. And of course, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And before we wrap up this week, I want to let you know again how excited we are about the arrival of Plugged In's new book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family. We think it'll help you understand how and why entertainment and technology have the ability to influence us deeply. And we want to give you some concrete and down-to-earth ideas for how to work through this incredibly complicated thing in our lives. And today, for a gift of any amount to the Plugged In Show, we would love to send you a copy of the book, and you'll find information on how to do that in the episode notes for today's show. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us at the Plugged In Show this week. We know you have a lot of ways that you could spend your time. We like spending it with you, and we look forward to joining you again next week on the Plugged In Show.
God wants true disciples. Ones that think like him, talk like him, walk like him. Disciples that bring shalom to the chaos of this world. Pursue that path with the RVL Discipleship Series. Bible scholar Ray Vanderlaan will give you the tools to understand the Bible more deeply and inspire you to be a passionate follower of Christ. Watch the first episode at rvldiscipleship.com.